comes to your mind that you are better than any other person, then think along these lines. If the person is older than you, then remind yourself that he is better than you in matters of Islam because he has done more good deeds than you have. If the person is younger than you, then remind yourself that this person is better than you because he has committed less sins than you have. If he is of your age, then your argument should be, he is better than you in matters of Islam, since you know of your own sins but not of his. What you heard are bezels of wisdom, but these are not the words of any philosopher who might have arrived at this undeniable truth after years of contemplation and a life of stumbling in the dark. As a matter of fact, these golden guidelines for our salvation were taught to us by a person who was free of any faults and whimsical thoughts, since he was a member of that select group called the Ahlul Bayt, whose spotless cleanliness and pristine purity God Almighty has vouchsafed in Ayah 33 of Surah Ahzab of the Noble Quran. He's the person whose birthday we celebrate every year on the 5th of Sha'ban. To be more precise, he is Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn, peace upon him, famous as Zainul Abidin, or Ornament of the Worshippers of God, who was born in Medina over a millennium and 4 centuries ago in the year 38 AH, 2 years before the martyrdom of his grandfather, the one and only commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. As the son and successor of the martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, he was the direct great-grandson of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. His mother was the princess of Persia, Hazrat Shahr Banu, peace upon her, daughter of the last Sasanid emperor of Iran, Iraq, Yazgird III, and because of that lady's pious personality, he was often called Ibnul Khiyaratain, meaning son of the two excellent ones. Such an impeccable lineage did not mean that life was a bed of roses for him and his family. After losing his mother to the cold hands of death while still an infant, he was brought up by his immaculate paternal aunt, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her. He had entered the 3rd year of his life when he saw the end of the only instance of the model government of social justice in 40 AH, with the martyrdom of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, in Kufa, where the Prophet's divinely designated heir was struck on the head by the poisoned sword of the renegade Abdurrahman ibn Muljam. Some 7 months later, in 41 AH, the caliphate or temporal rule of the vast Muslim realm was deceitfully seized from his uncle and future father-in-law, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him, by the rebellious governor of Syria, Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan. The boy found the noble Ahlul Bayt under renewed persecution, as they had been since the passing away of the Prophet in 11 AH, the usurpation of the right of political leadership of his grandfather Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the tragic martyrdom of his grandmother, the noblest lady of all times, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her. When he reached the age of 12, the divine mantle of Imamat came to rest on the shoulders of his father, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, following the martyrdom of his uncle through a fatal dose of poison by the charlatan Muawiyah. Now his father became the target of enmity of the hypocrites, masquerading as Muslims, especially the accursed Umayyad regime. In 60 AH, as a 22-year-old in the full bloom of youth, he had to hurriedly leave Medina along with his father and the rest of the family when the godless Yazid usurped the caliphate and demanded allegiance to his tyrannical rule. In early 61 AH, the caravan of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, arrived on the fateful plain of Karbala, where on the day of Ashura, the 23-year-old sick and bedridden man witnessed the tragic martyrdom of his father, brothers, uncles, cousins, and close companions of the Ahlul Bayt. It was under these heartening conditions that Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, formally took charge of the Divine Trust of Imamat, which began with chains and fetters around his limbs. And the forced march of the mainly women and children survivors of history's most heart-wrenching tragedy to Kufa and then to Damascus in Syria, the capital of Yazid. As the fourth infallible heir of the Seal of Messengers, his frail figure now rose to the occasion. He delivered a moving sermon to the people of Kufa, who were watching in amusement the parading of the noble captives with heads of the martyrs mounted on lanes. After waving his hand to calm them down, he said, "O people of Kufa, I am the son of Hussein, peace upon him. I am Ali, the grandson of Ali, Fatima, and the Prophet, peace upon them. I am the son of that imam whose sons were killed and his properties looted and plundered and his family held prisoners before you. You wrote invitation letters to my father. When he came towards you, you killed him. What will you reply to God and his prophet on the day of judgment?" Time does allow us to dwell on the famous sermon of Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, in the court of Yazid in Damascus that shook the Umayyad regime to its very foundations and forced the tyrant to release the Ahlul Bayt and send them back to Medina. During the next 34 years of his life, when the Tawabin or penitents of Iraq staged an uprising followed by Mukhtar Thaqafi to avenge the blood of his father by bringing to justice almost all perpetrators of the tragedy of Karbala, his tears never ran dry and continued to flow, whether in grief or as thanksgiving to the Lord Most High for his endless favors. His period of imamat was a critical situation in view of the tussle for political power between Abdullah ibn Zubayr and the Umayyads, who were both unworthy of leadership. Both were hostile to him and the Hashemite clan. Both wanted to wipe out the followers of the Ahlul Bayt. As rulers rose, played havoc with Muslim blood and fell to their doom, the fourth Imam adopted a unique form of jihad through the medium of supplications in the divine court. He not just expounded the fundamentals of faith and God's infinite mercy, but also unraveled the mysteries of the science, as is evident by his reference to the weight of light and other amazing facts, something unthinkable in those days. His lasting legacy is Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah, famous as Psalms of the Progeny of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He also dictated to his disciples the Risalat al-Huquq, or Treaties of Rights, which details even the most minute rights and has been hailed as a million times better than the UN Charter of Human Rights. Imam Zayn al-Abidin, peace upon him, however, was no ascetic, unattached and unconcerned of worldly affairs. When the regime in Damascus was helpless in the face of pressures from the Byzantine Empire regarding supply of coins that were engraved with emblems of the Christian creed, he magnanimously sent his son and eventual successor, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, to Syria to give the necessary advice and make arrangements for setting up of the first ever mint in the Islamic realm, thus saving the faith of the Muslims and the drain of the bullion. In 95 AH, at the age of 57, the fourth Imam was martyred through a fatal dose of poison given by Walid I, but not before he had delivered the followers of the Ahlul Bayt from the thorniest periods of their lives. Today, although his tomb in what was the grand mausoleum in the sacred Baqi cemetery of Medina, along with the tombs of his uncle Imam Hassan, his son Imam Muhammad Baqir, and his grandson Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon them, have been blasphemously demolished by the ungodly Wahhabi cult. Imam Zayn al-Abidin, peace upon him, continues to rule the hearts of believers all over the world.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. The purpose of all the Islamic and Tawhidi, oneness of Allah, monotheistic thinking organizations has been this. All of Islam's affairs and commands are a preface for making human being a real man. If this creature who walks on 2 feet receives training, then all of mankind's desires in the world and the hereafter will create inquiry. If this creature who walks upon 2 feet becomes obstinate or stubborn or acts against his nature, then he will cause chaos, confusion in the whole world. That is why all the prophets are teachers and all of mankind are students.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. You're listening to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Islam and our deeds. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini said that consider that you are the custodians of Islam and not of yourselves. Now, what does it mean is generally we are ignorant towards the religion, we are ignorant towards our actions and the consequences, basically, not the actions, but the consequences of our actions. Now, when we perform something, it has effects on different things. For example, when someone is praying, it has an effect on himself as a person. On the other hand, it has effect on the neighbors or the people who are watching him and the society, and it has effect and impact on this world, obviously, where we are living. Therefore, and also if someone performs a bad action or bad deed, which is not according to the Islamic teachings, he is affecting himself, he is affecting the society, the neighbors, those who are watching him. Therefore, when Imam Khomeini also says that, consider that you are the custodian of Islam and not of yourselves, it means that pay attention towards what you do. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi sallallahu alayhi. Your deeds are basically should be in a way that you save Islam, you save the picture of Islam, you save the teachings of Islam. It should not be against the Islamic teachings, because if a person performs, a Muslim performs something which is against Islam, the others would think that this is also the part of Islam. You can see how the Islamophobia is expanding, how the enemies are propagating the Islamophobia, how this the troops that were made by enemies like ISIS, Daesh, enemies which were the groups which were made by enemies, which are made by rebels and the enemies of Islam, how they portray, how their actions are spreading the Islamophobia, whereas these are not the Muslims. The ISIS or Daesh are not Muslims, but they are covering themselves, they are showing themselves, expressing themselves as the Muslims. And therefore, in the West, we can see how people are fearful about Islam. Why? Because when they see that someone who's trying to show himself as a Muslim and he's slaughtering people, he's killing people, and this harshness in the religion, therefore they run away from this religion. Whereas this is not Islam. Islam is the religion of peace. Islam is not what ISIS and Daesh does. You can see when you go into the Muslim community, how they live in their mosques, in their Husseiniyas. You can see the sermons when they have, how they deal with the people, how the Muslims are living. Therefore, we all, as Muslims, are the custodians of Islam, and we need to be careful of our actions, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Thank you. the Western media's portrayal of Ukraine's suffering is somehow different compared to those suffering from wars in other countries like Yemen, Libya, Ethiopia, Palestine, and Syria has sparked widespread criticism. News coverage of civilian Ukrainians defending their country by making Molotov cocktails and arming themselves with the state-given machine guns has also been celebrated as heroic, and these people have been called freedom fighters. This empathy has not been voiced for others, like Palestinians who experience an identical crisis, yet are labeled terrorists when defending their land. The suffering in Ukraine must be highlighted. However, portraying Ukraine's pain as more human shows the deep hypocrisy at play. Now, the West has come under criticism over what is seen as double standards regarding conflicts in other parts of the world.
You're happy to correctly use the most strong and robust language to describe the crimes against humanity of Vladimir Putin, but you will not use the same strength of language when it comes to describing the Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, when it is now being documented and detailed by two of the most respected human rights organizations in the world, and indeed has been alleged by dozens and dozens of non-governmental organizations, and to be honest, anybody who looks honestly.
Barrett asked whether the Irish Parliament will impose sanctions against Israel. He also asked whether the Irish legislative body would support calls for referring Israel to international courts over its crimes against humanity. This is not the first time the Western media has shown its bias. A similar narrative was pushed against Palestinians last year. Israel's decades-long occupation, its crippling blockade and military grip over Palestinians, as well as a wave of demolitions, led to a two-week war that killed around 260 Palestinians and 13 Israelis. News outlets and political figures spoke out on the conflict, but it started with the opposite end of the story, starting with Palestinian reactions and violence. While Israel was the real aggressor, they focused on rockets fired by the Hamas resistance movement that came later in retaliation. The double standards of the US and the West are the focal point of tension, violence, and bloodshed, and make Washington an unacceptable mediator and a country that is unable to achieve stability in the world. The war in Yemen is another example. Scant coverage of the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Yemenis killed by arms from Western countries, especially the US. Yet the media portrays the real Yemeni army as the aggressor, and the ones doing the bombing as the ones who are following the path of righteousness. More than 1.3 million Ukrainians have fled their homeland so far since the beginning of the conflict with Russia. Countries like Hungary and Poland are being praised for letting in tens of thousands of people, and the EU is preparing measures that would offer temporary residence permits, as well as access to employment and social welfare. But the open-door policy of several states has highlighted an apparent double standard. These refugees can enter some countries more easily than those escaping violence in the Middle East or North Africa. For instance, Poland has welcomed those fleeing the Ukraine war while it pushed back against a wave of immigrants crossing over from Belarus, mostly from the Middle East and Africa, last year. Also, the reporting of this tragedy has seen double standards and Eurocentric bias that hold one group of human lives more valuable than others who are suffering conflicts in countries such as Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine.
But this isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European, I have to choose those words carefully too, city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
This was just one of many remarks on media outlets drawing the line between the conflict unfolding in Ukraine and those in other parts of the world. Many also drew a comparison between Europe's welcoming of Ukrainian refugees and the influx of Syrians, Iraqis, and Afghans, which was declared a migrant crisis. The suffering of refugees from these countries is being played down and almost made to seem that their lives are not as important in comparison to the lives of those fleeing Ukraine. The Western media have been doing a biased reporting of the ongoing crisis in Ukraine. The dehumanization of people of color, of those from countries that are not in the West, needs to stop. More needs to be done to improve for the future of building a united wider society, which values every single person as a human being.
Russia's decision to attack Ukraine has ushered in a new era in its relations with the West. The United States and its allies are supplying Ukraine with arms and providing it with intelligence to fight Russian troops. But they are not directly involved in the clashes.
The only way to actually implement something like a no-fly zone is to send NATO planes into Ukrainian airspace and to shoot down Russian planes. And that could lead to a full-fledged war. In Europe, President Biden has been clear that we are not going to get into a war with Russia.
Of course the U.S. doesn't want that, because if a war breaks out between the West and Russia, the concept of mutually assured destruction will be on the table, meaning that the two sides, both nuclear powers, will be risking total annihilation. To avoid the doomsday scenario, the West has resorted to another form of warfare, the economic type. The United States and many of its allies have announced unprecedented sanctions on Russia, targeting its financial, banking, and oil and gas sector, among others. These include sanctions on Russia's central bank, exclusion of several Russian banks from the SWIFT payment system, and a ban on Russian banks and companies' access to Western capital markets. In other words, Russia's engagement in dollar-denominated business will be severely affected. But let's not forget that for every action, there will be an opposite reaction.
Look, the dominance of the dollar has afforded America great global power, but it is now under real threat as never before, as Russia, China, and others economically challenge the US. Many are now seeking to ditch their dependence on the dollar, as Washington has continued to abuse its status as issuer of the world's reserve currency for decades, really, since after the Second World War.
Russia has already been working on plans to reduce its dependence on the trade in the dollar. Russian President Vladimir Putin visited Beijing for the opening of the Winter Olympic Games in China in early February and met with his Chinese counterpart. It was President Xi Jinping's first face-to-face meeting with another head of state in nearly 2 years, which highlights the importance of the visit. The two leaders discussed the need to broaden bilateral trade in national currencies due to the unpredictability surrounding the use of the dollar. Russia has been pursuing the policy for a while. Back in April 2021, the share of Russian exports in dollars fell below 50% for the first time. Moscow's trade with Beijing is mostly responsible for the dive. There's room for improvement, though, as a majority of trade between China and Russia is done in euro, with just over 30% of the transactions conducted in their national currencies. The sweeping sanctions on Russia may push China to speed up measures to break with the US currency and create its own means of payment. The obvious option is the yuan, which is getting stronger than ever. In July, international trade in the Chinese currency set a new record, with many predicting that at this rate, the yuan will become the world's third strongest currency by 2030.
Beijing has been actively encouraging the use of its currency in trade transactions, especially under its massive Belt and Road Initiative, with China recovering more strongly than other big nations after the COVID crisis that we've had. Foreign capital has been flooding in too as Beijing opens its financial markets.
This means only one thing. Given the economic alliance between China and Russia, the sanctions might temporarily hurt Moscow, but in the long run, the West will be disarmed of its economic pressure tool.
Months of intense negotiations in the Austrian capital Vienna to revive the 2015 Iran deal coming to an end. The dialogue faces a make-or-break moment in the coming days.
A draft text of an agreement between Iran and the P4 plus 1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, is almost complete. The diplomatic effort seems to be near a climax, but still the very few remaining gaps in the text are keeping the whole thing in limbo, and a final failure is still a possibility. There has been a flurry of diplomatic efforts in Vienna's Palais Coburg Hotel, the venue of the marathon negotiations. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh said on Thursday that talks between Iran and the P4 plus 1 are still ongoing, and no one can say that an agreement has been reached until all outstanding important issues are resolved. The Iranian foreign ministry spokesman said extra efforts are needed to resolve the remaining issues and that everyone is now focused on the final key steps. Meanwhile, Russia's chief negotiator in Vienna says the talks are unlikely to end in failure. Mikhail Ulyanov told reporters in Vienna on Thursday evening that the remaining issues are few but need to be addressed. Ulyanov's comments were echoed by Britain's chief negotiator in Vienna, Stephanie Alkagh, who said the parties are very close to an agreement. The Iranian side insisted that the talks in the Austrian capital have to reach a good deal or there will be no deal at all. Negotiators in Vienna have been trying to find a way to remove American unilateral sanctions against Iran and allow the U.S. to return to the 2015 deal. The U.S. sanctions were imposed after the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA in 2018. U.S. President Joe Biden has acknowledged that his predecessor's pullout was wrong, but Biden's words have done little to solve America's credibility problem that is largely blamed on Donald Trump. Tehran now says the sanctions must be removed in a verifiable manner, and Washington must offer guarantees that it will not abandon the agreement again. The United States has been dragging its feet so far, but Tehran says it will not back down from its red lines.
Iran can't go through the same thing again. I mean, in 2018, the U.S. unilaterally, abrogated the JCPOA, slapped on punitive sanctions. Iran had had 3.5 years of intense economic suffering, and it doesn't want to see that happen again. It doesn't want to sign some treaty. Only to see, to see the same thing happen either in, either later this year or in 2024 when, if Donald Trump is reelected.
Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council Ali Shamkhani has warned that if the Vienna talks do not lead to a good deal, the current U.S. administration will feel defeated in the near future due to lack of timely use of diplomatic opportunities. As all eyes are on the venue of the talks in Vienna, Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, will visit Tehran on Saturday to hold talks with Iran's nuclear chief and other top officials. The IAEA says the two sides will discuss outstanding safeguards issues with a view to addressing them. Does Grossi's trip boost the chances of a deal in Vienna? It is hard to guess at this point. The negotiations have been very complex, and there is no guarantee that they will end in a deal. It now seems that the fate of the diplomatic effort largely depends on whether the West will finally choose to make necessary political decisions.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has blamed the American regime for the current Ukraine crisis. He demanded an end to the war in Ukraine, saying the Islamic Republic of Iran has always opposed war and destruction anywhere in the world. The U.S. disrupted the stability of the country by interfering in its affairs and organizing rallies and creating a color coup. We oppose the killing of people and the destruction of the infrastructure of nations. leader called the U.S. a perfect example and manifestation of modern ignorance, saying it feeds off the crises it creates all around the world.
Washington are glorified mobsters. That's all. America does to all of its allies. You've got to remember, there's a very good saying, if you're an American enemy, they might bribe you and bring you into their team. If you're their ally, good luck to you, sir.
Ayatollah Khamenei is referring to years of U.S. meddling in Ukraine since it became an independent state in 1990s. After the fall of the Soviet Union, the U.S. pledged not to expand NATO eastward close to the borders with Russia. But the U.S. and its Western allies reneged their pledges and started to include more Eastern European countries into the Western military alliance. In 2014, the U.S. implemented a color revolution in Ukraine and overthrew its democratically elected government. U.S. also supported the inclusion of right-wing groups and elements within Ukraine's government. It's now widely believed that in trying to move Ukraine into their orbit, Washington and its European allies overextended themselves, and Russia's intervention, firstly in facilitating Crimea's reunification with Moscow in 2014, then with the official recognition of the independence and sovereignty of the People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk, and now with a wider military operation to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, is the result. Elsewhere, in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said there are lessons to be drawn with regard to the Ukraine crisis. He said Western powers cannot be trusted and their support for their puppet regimes is only, quote, a mirage. Iran's leader said both Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani have acknowledged that the U.S. simply abandoned them amid their domestic crises. As the crisis unfolded in Ukraine, the country's president, Zelensky, being left alone by the West, the U.S. has refused to send in soldiers to the country to protect its people and has only pledged more money and weapons.
Well, the Ukrainian president was basically helped into power by American advisors and American campaign organizers. The Ukrainian president was told that he could go ahead and put down by force the Donbass ethnic Russians who revolted after the government in Ukraine banned their language and restricted their ethnic autonomy.
The same scenario happened in Afghanistan, when after 20 years of occupation, the U.S. disastrously pulled out of the country, leaving President Ghani and Afghan people alone in the face of Taliban fighters. The U.S. is facing backlash over its treatment of its Arab allies. Despite selling them weapons worth billions of dollars and pledging support, it has failed to provide them with sustainable security.
More desperate. They put you in a more serious situation than you were before, and the terms that they dictate to you are much, much more demanding than it would have been had you not taken the actions that they allowed you to take at the first. So Zelensky took actions against his own ethnic Russian citizens at the bidding of the United States, at their will.
It's now become apparent that the failure of successive U.S. presidents and their European allies since the end of the Soviet era has been to overestimate their own power and underestimate that of Russia, China, Iran, and other countries that are outside their sphere of influence.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned. All the universe calls out the name of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam for its sanctity. However, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam on the scene of Karbala called out the name of Hazrat Abul Fazl al-Abbas. This shows the great position of Hazrat Abul Fazl al-Abbas in the eyes of his Imam. This was because of the politeness and loyalty of Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas.
این بچه و این فرزند تربیت شده اون مادره.
Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas was educated and nurtured by his mother Ummul Banin. Ummul Banin, at the time of the martyrdom of Imam Ali alayhi salam, had four sons. All of her sons, including Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas, were martyred on the day of Ashura in the tragedy of Karbala. She, out of her courtesy for the family of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, did a great sacrifice and gave away her dearest ones in the way of Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
News, scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
In the streets of the Chadian capital city, an actor is bringing culture to impoverished neighborhoods by organizing readings of poetry and plays.
Culture should be accessible to all. If we want to have a wonderful world, a harmonious world, everyone should be focused on the same dimensions to be able to dream together. And without culture, we don't be able to initiate development. And to initiate this stage of development, we need to invite people to think together.
The actor does not have a fixed place to tell his stories. He performs in public spaces and says it is his way of giving everyone the opportunity to discover and explore creativity. Among the activities Bonaventure organizes, one can name drawing with children and conducting acting classes. He believes music and theater bring other disciplines together, creating an avenue for enriching human connections. Residents, especially the children of the impoverished neighborhood, say they always look forward to Bonaventure's arrival. A zoo in Peru's capital city, Lima, is celebrating a rare hatching of endangered baby crocodiles. The Huachipa Zoo showcased three females and one male to the public on the World Wildlife Day. The four crocodiles were born in incubators as part of the conservation efforts for the reptile. This species is an American crocodile, which is on the endangered list of animals in Peru. Zookeepers say the black market and threats on their habitat have seen the crocodile population dwindle. The zoo regularly receives animals that were rescued from trafficking. Among those traits are tortoises, macaws, and monkeys.
The 2022 World Cup is reaching a fever pitch as hundreds of people line up at a shopping center in Qatar to take a picture with a trophy. The famous Golden World Cup trophy was unveiled during a ceremony at a mall in Doha, where excited football fans waited for their turn to see it. They were also given the option to take a selfie or have their photo taken professionally. While the competition is still nearly a year away, FIFA says more than a million tickets were requested within the first 24 hours after sales opened. The highest demand came from fans from Qatar, followed by Argentina, Mexico, and the United States, among others. Bangladesh is reviving the ancient tradition of producing a historically renowned fine hand-woven fabric called muslin. With the help of the government, the trade is making a comeback. Now, a workshop has been set up in Dhaka where weavers are being trained in the ancient art. They say it took them months to master the craft, working with incredibly fine hand-spun cotton yarns. The weavers say it takes them 8 hours to spin just 4 centimeters. Some varieties of the fabric are so fine that an entire muslin sari could fit inside a single matchbox.
There was a myth about muslin that it was so delicate that it would pass through even a small ring. Look, it's true. There is space to squeeze in another piece of cloth through this ring as well.
Breathing life back into this ancient trade was not easy. Officials with a revival project say there was little knowledge about how this fabric was made. Plus, the rare cotton variant, which makes this fabric so expensive, was also lost. The precious fabric was the most extravagant of its era and popular in Mughal courts. It was also imported into Europe for much of the 17th century and transformed the style of the aristocracy there.
An art gallery in London, Tate Modern, is hosting an exhibition with a remarkable span of surrealist works. The exhibition, dubbed Surrealism Beyond Borders, features more than 170 artworks ranging from paintings and sculptures to photography and films. Works by more than 150 artists from over 60 years are on the display. The exhibit also has a wide geographical span and includes surrealist artworks artworks from different countries. Some of the most prominent artists whose works are being exhibited include Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, and Ted Jones. The exhibition will run until August 9th. Impressive, creative, wonderful. That's how visitors describe the works of Vincent Hoch, a Dutch post-impressionist painter being displayed in an impressive art exhibition in the Argentine capital. Hundreds of Van Gogh's paintings are projected onto the walls of the gallery. The image bloom and ripple in front of the audience, creating a 3D-like and immersive experience. Van Gogh was one of the most famous and influential figures in Western art history of the 19th century. He is largely remembered for his impressionist style, a break from the old traditional art technique. He is also famous for his turbulent life, which was made for outlandish, emotionally charged paintings.
Persian language takes center stage in a conference in Tehran dubbed Promotion of Persian Language on Global Scale. The event seeks to preserve the ancient language through teaching it to non-Iranians. Yusuf Jalali has more.
Persian language has been spoken for 3 millennia, but like every cultural heritage, it needs to be preserved. This is according to officials from Iran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, who sat with Persian language activists to discuss ways to promote Persian through teaching it to non-Iranians.
Today is actually the Persian language day for me and for many of my colleagues. So if you allow me, I would like to continue in Farsi.
Thank you for this opportunity. The identity of a nation is a set of shared beliefs, shared culture and history, and all of these issues are reflected in the language that each nation speaks. So today, all of those who have a role in the promotion of Persian language gathered to exchange views on the preservation of Persian, and we at the Foreign Ministry will facilitate any effort made in this regard.
1,000 years ago, Iran had a poet named Ferdowsi whose poems are still popular and understood by our generation. This is significant and shows that Persian is an old language that has stayed intact through the centuries.
Sa'di Foundation is the leading entity in the promotion of Persian language. Every year, the Institute, together with the Islamic Culture and Relations Organization, holds a number of Persian refresher courses in and outside Iran for non-Persian speakers. Recently, the Institute has launched online courses and published self-study books for Persian language enthusiasts.
By launching the online Persian training platforms, we saw a sudden increase in the number of applicants from different countries. This is because many of those who are interested in learning Persian gained an instant access to Persian teaching contents. At the same time, we continue to launch in-person courses organized by Iran's cultural attaches and hosted by Iranian overseas schools.
Persian comes from the Indo-European family of languages. The earliest versions of Persian date back to roughly 2,500 years ago, during the Achaemenid dynasty. Today, it is spoken by more than 300 million people in the world, and different dialects, including Dari and Pashto, in countries such as Iran, Afghanistan, and Tajikistan. Besides its significant impact on science, medicine, and astronomy, Persian has its own prominent place in literature and poetry. Khayyam, Rumi, Sa'di, and Hafez are only a few examples of world-renowned Persian poets.
Language is the identity of a nation, and through the centuries of its spoken and written history, Persian has grown to become the narrator of Iran's rich past and its ancient civilization. Now, as learning a language is learning a culture, experts here say promoting Persian on a global scale is translated into introducing Iran and its culture to the world. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
It is now well-established facts that animals feel think, behave, and even experience pain. Thus, they should be treated with the same respect as humans, while a center in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo is doing the same. Life-saving services to injured apes. The sanctuary, located in a vast national park, has been active for 2 decades. The center houses scores of chimpanzees, gorillas, and endangered great apes. Bonobos and bonobos as well. Most of the animals that are brought to the sanctuary were rescued from poachers. The staff there provide medical care to the injured animals until they are healthy enough to be integrated into a group of their fellow species.
Students and staff gather for sizzling meat sandwiches as they signal their orders with their hands at a food truck in Pakistan's capital city of Islamabad. The Abbey Cow is no ordinary food truck parked on the campus of the Millennium Universal College. It's fully managed and run by staff with hearing impairments. At the beginning of the queue, a diagram shows simple phrases in sign language which customers use to order their food and communicate. The food truck is Pakistan's first mobile restaurant entirely staffed by deaf workers, providing an economic opportunity for them.
Having the startup here at our campus has been really fruitful. Not only have we created more awareness around the sign language amongst our students, but we've also created an inspiration for TMUC students to look up and pursue entrepreneurship as a career choice.
The project developer, Aisha Raza, says the majority of deaf youth end up unemployed and face inequality and discrimination. She says she wanted to create an opportunity for her brothers to economically thrive. The goal is to bridge communication gaps between the deaf and hearing communities and help remove language barriers. The food truck is the brainchild of a family where both parents and their sons are either totally or partially deaf. The 16th Fajr International Poetry Festival has wrapped up with an award ceremony in Tehran. The literary event aims to honor Persian poets from Iran and the world with the ultimate goal of elevating Persian poetry. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's an occasion to honor poets and poetry. The 16th edition of Fajr International Poetry Festival saw its closing ceremony in Tehran, where the best Persian poetry works of the year were acknowledged and awarded. During the event, participants from Iran and other countries contended in different categories, including classic poetry, modern poetry, and children and young adults.
I won the prize for the best poetry book for children and young adults. My book is titled Silence in the Mother Tongue. I'm so glad that my effort is seen, judged, and acknowledged by top Iranian literary personalities from the jury of the festival.
Certainly, Fajr Poetry Festival is of great significance to me as an Afghan poet. Here, literary experts from Iran, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and many parts of the world can network and make joint efforts to promote the Persian language.
Iran is known as the land of poets, being home to many world-renowned literary figures over the centuries, including Rumi, Hafez, and Khayyam. Experts here believe Persian poetry has no expiry date, and not only do Iranians still read ancient poems, they're also interested in modern prose and poetry.
Poetry is a beautiful language that speaks the beauty of the world, and such a language always communicates very well with the hearts of human beings. Iranians have long understood the beauty of this language and still listen to it and read it in its every form and genre.
Fajr International Poetry Festival was launched in 2006 as a platform for Persian poets from Iran and other Persian-speaking countries to get together for the elevation of Persian poetry. However, the literary event has grown to encompass non-Persian poets who are interested in Iranian literature.
Poetry holds a special position among Iranians, and you can rarely find an Iranian family that doesn't have a poetry book in their bookshelves. Now, aside from acknowledging Persian literary figures and poets, Fajr Festival seeks to preserve this long-standing culture and introduce it to the world. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
www.parstoday.com/en.